The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks. Welcome. It is Political Monday. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show weekdays. We start at 11, and then we go right until 2 o'clock right here. It's AM 1380 and 99.9 FM. And it's WNRI. This portion of the program is brought to you by our friends at K's 1013 Cass Ave in Woonsocket. They're right across from CVS, whether it's lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. Stop in to K's. When you open up the napkin, there's the menu right there. K's, right across from CVS, 1013 Cass Avenue in Woonsocket. All right, let's bring him on. It is Political Monday, and joining us, he is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be with you.
Well, for Justin, here we are, the day before, the big primary coming up on Wednesday. A couple things before we get into the races. I'd like your thoughts, and I'll share with you some of mine. And one of the things is, how much do you think weather, meaning the weather outside, it is supposed to rain on Wednesday, how much do you think weather, having it on a Wednesday as opposed to a Tuesday, just had a caller saying, well, you know, the big primary tomorrow, people get confused. It is out of the ordinary. And how much do you think that could affect turnout coming up on Wednesday? Another factor, actually, that I mentioned that I haven't seen anyone report on, but there's a larger number of individuals who work now in Boston and Massachusetts than even just 4 years ago. And I'm not saying it's 100,000, but there are more people, more jobs leaving, more people every year actually working in Massachusetts, and whether it's Boston just or somewhere over the Mass line. And, you know, it just makes it that much more that it's a rainy Wednesday and you get off the train and then you got to come home and, you know, the polls close at 8, and I think there's a difference between I'm going to shoot over at lunchtime or I'm going to go in the morning. People that commute up to Boston, the polls aren't open till 7. A lot of them have to, that kind of eliminates that. But I'm just wondering where right now you get a feel on voter turnout for Wednesday.
Well, on the one hand, we have some contentious primaries going on that should increase voter turnout. Progressives are showing around the country that they want to go to the polls, so they'll be out one way or another. On the other hand, there just doesn't seem to be that much enthusiasm across the population. As you say, the weather will be a factor for people who just casually vote, and difficulties remembering when the primaries are. There was a tweet thread that went around among local media this morning. It was just a young guy from California who's voting in Rhode Island for the first time this year, talking about his difficulty finding out where to vote. And some of his points were, you know, probably unique to him, you know, trouble with the website. But others, that, you know, you go to the Board of Elections website, it's not in big, bold letters, election this week, Wednesday. So a number of factors are playing against the possibility of a huge turnout, which probably will have different effects in different races. Joe Fleming, the pollster, suggests that a large turnout helps Raimondo because there's not only progressives might want to go with Brown, but she's got a built-in base of people who still don't like her within the state and local workforces because of the pension reform. And these are people who naturally work locally and also whose contracts often have some provision that helps them vote, to get out to vote. And also the built-in structure to talk. On the other hand, she does have endorsements from a number of the labor unions. So I don't know. I think weather and a different day probably aren't decisive factors. It might be a little different if the change in day, if it were Monday instead of Tuesday rather than Wednesday instead of Tuesday, because people who want to vote will go out on Tuesday to vote and discover it's Wednesday, and they'll still have an opportunity to do it, whereas if it were reversed, they wouldn't be able to do that. I think the bigger factors will be, you know, just people's motivation, and that's what's going to determine the voter turnout in the long run, I think.
I think you're right. I think also, you know, having such a late primary and then even competing with, you know, tomorrow becomes September, anniversary of September 11th. Patriots football season started. I heard from one campaign, very, very difficult. You know, they were trying to campaign yesterday, going door to door and interrupting people, either couldn't get the time of day because they're watching the Patriots game, and then other times people just weren't home because sometimes families gather together, go somewhere to watch the game. So there are definitely downsides to this. There was some endorsements over the weekend. I'd like your thoughts on the significance of it and whether or not, you know, it how much that helps. I know some people may not think it helps. I think it does help more than others. And I think anyone that questions endorsements and whether or not they really work, I think one of the most highly dramatic endorsements was that in 2008 when the Kennedy family, Ted Kennedy, the late Senator Kennedy and Patrick Kennedy, joined President Obama on stage and they endorsed President Obama over Hillary Clinton. If anyone wondered, I mean, that gave him a huge boost. And the same thing with the fact that Oprah had endorsed President Obama. So, but I want to start off with the significance, your mind, of Bernie Sanders over the weekend on Saturday endorsed Lieutenant Governor Aaron Ruggenberg.
Well, I think the central value of endorsements is it helps voters sort of categorize everybody. So if it's not so much that, oh, Sheldon Whitehouse endorsed Gina Raimondo, that means she's my gal. You know, I think it's more, all right, I'm generally aligned with this collection of politicians. And over time, you have histories with them, so you know, okay, Reid, Whitehouse, you can get their different flavors. And when they all endorse a particular candidate, you know that that person's in the general school of politics that you endorse yourself. And so I think that's the largest piece of that. So I'm not sure that of itself, the Sanders endorsement of Ruggenberg will have an effect on that particular race. In large part, I mean, it may motivate some of Ruggenberg's people to get out there. Makes it seem like a bigger deal. But in the main, I think people voting in the Democrat primary for lieutenant governor kind of knew that Ruggenberg is the Sanders guy. Where I think that endorsement actually might be game-changing is in the governor's race, because Matt Brown did not get
exactly
Bernie Sanders' endorsement, which wouldn't be a big deal. There's no reason why Bernie Sanders should be endorsing anybody in Rhode Island anyway. You know, it's kind of almost a vanity thing to some extent. But the fact that he reached into Rhode Island over the governor's race to endorse Ruggenberg in lieutenant governor, which we all know to be a largely inconsequential office, and skipped Matt Brown, that sends a signal in itself that a lot of, as I've been saying for months, Raimondo is pretty progressive. So any progressives who are, it kind of hits that anti-establishment talking point, because here comes the bizarrely emblematic leader of the anti-establishment, this old rich guy, socialist, but he reaches over the governor's race and doesn't want to get involved. And that I think hurts Brown more than it helps Raimondo, and probably more than it helps Ruggenberg as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that, I think, Justin, that really would have helped Matt Brown if he could have secured the endorsement from Bernie Sanders, which is the gold standard. In their world, that means a lot. And, you know, the motivation to get someone, and that was what they were working for. They finally did get it. There's no one bigger in that movement than that. So he did get that. What was also interesting was on the Newsmakers debate between Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee and Aaron Ruggenberg. When asked who are they going to vote for governor, Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee did not flinch and said, I'm voting for Gina Governor Raimondo. And Ruggenberg would not answer the question. He just said, I'm focused on the race. So to me, that was another missed opportunity. Now, in a way, that kind of hurts Raimondo, because here's the guy getting the Sanders endorsement and he's not voting for her. But it really hurt, again, Matt Brown, because that to me could have helped Matt Brown. It also goes to my fact or point, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think it was two or 3 weeks ago, Hummel had this panel on Live Experiment, and I know a lot of people don't watch it anymore, but I do and tape it. And they were like, well, you know, a Ruggenberg voter is a Matt Brown voter. And Justin, I don't buy that. I am not convinced the progressives that go in for Ruggenberg also then, boom, cast the ballot for Matt Brown. I don't think whatever broke down there, Matt Brown, I think that would have been big if he could have struck, and maybe it was impossible, but some kind of partnership with Ruggenberg to get him to go along with him, endorse him. That would have been big, and would have been very, to see the two of them. You know, one answers the question, the other one will not, which I find a little odd. Like, you're going to vote. All right, you're going to vote for yourself, and then are you going to leave that blank? But they didn't push him on it. But what do you make of that, that Ruggenberg won't get involved in the race for governor?
Well, I think it all comes down to, and we discussed this a couple weeks ago after that Lively experiment panel, that the question is, for progressives in Rhode Island, is Gina Raimondo progressive enough for me that I don't want to take the risk on somebody whom all the polls are showing will not win? I think it's kind of hard to make the case that it's pretty easy for Raimondo to say, look, I'm progressive. Look at all these things I've pushed. I'm a woman. So that was always going to be a hard angle for Brown. And so he may have been trying hard, and he should have been, to get that, to continue that. I mean, he's backed by the Justice Democrats at the national level, but they've got their own agenda to push this insurgent narrative. But Raimondo's young, she's progressive, and it's kind of hard to go up against that as somebody of the same age, not a woman, wealthy white guy. So he had to get some more momentum from progressives, and he just didn't do it. And I've been wondering if some of the negative ads from Raimondo.
Justin? All right, folks, I'm not sure what happened. We lost Justin. I think he will call right back. And as soon as he calls back, we'll put him right on. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I'm assuming he maybe just hit something happened with the cell. And then we'll have him right back on. In the meantime, I'll use this opportunity to remind you, this is a great time of year to stop in and see our friends at PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center, 3688 Quaker Lane in North Kingstown. You can call them at 295-4399. It's Steve, it's Debbie, it's Junior, it's Byron. There he is. It's PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. Now, they're open 7 days a week. They're open until 5 o'clock tonight. We're going to come back to Justin in just a moment. But right now, fall mums, kale, ornamental peppers, ready, all colors, grown on premises. Sizes start 4-inch, 12-inch pots and hangers. Still a beautiful selection of perennial trees and shrubs. Remember, the best time to landscape your yard is right now. Fall temperatures start to drop, less watering is required, and they have the trees and shrubs. Do it yourselfers, or you could schedule a free estimate. It's Rhode Island's number one garden center, PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. Look for them on Facebook, PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. They're open 7 days a week. They're open till 5 o'clock tonight. Located 3688 Quaker Lane in North Kingstown, right off Route 4, next door to Allie's Tack Shop, across from Allie's Donuts. It's PR Landscape Materials and Garden Center. All right, we continue with, not exactly sure what happened, Justin, but at least we have you back. What do you make of, I thought this was very significant that, by the way, did you get a chance, I don't know the answer to this, but did you get a chance to watch the Newsmakers debate with Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee and Aaron Ruggenberg?
Yeah, I did.
What was your thoughts on that?
I thought, to be honest, I thought McKee did about as badly as a decent manager could do.
Yeah.
He seemed nervous, defensive. He was overly dramatic in his gestures. And in contrast to Ruggenberg, who was very much on point. And I thought toward the end, McKee started to make the case for himself and explain why he had pursued better policies, but it was almost like he had to be dragged to that.
Yes.
And I think, it spoke to the real challenge that establishment-type Democrats have with this progressive insurgency, because McKee wouldn't attack the basic premises of, say, putting government in control of our health care, because government control is still very much part of the Democrat brand. So he can't say, you want to put government in charge of that, are you nuts? And that would be what a Republican or conservative would be able to say. So they have to play this game like, well, the numbers just don't work. And when you're defensive and look nervous and like you're not going to be able to overcome the charming young progressive, that makes sense a signal that, well, maybe you just aren't trying hard enough. And so I think there are a lot of ways he could have done a better job, including at the end, Tim White, I think it is, loves this question in every debate. Is say something nice. Can you say something nice about your opponent? And some years ago, what's his name, running against Cicilline, said, I like your tie. And that it was a signal, you don't have a serious answer.
Right.
And McKee said, Regenberg said, he's a great family man. And McKee said, he drives a nice car.
Yeah.
Which
Regenberg seemed offended by that, by the way.
Yeah. And it does go to some of, if McKee had a more coherent argument against Regenberg, I mean, he went to Brown, he's an Ivy Leaguer, he's not exactly a hard scrabble blue collar kid from, you know, part south side of Providence.
Hardly.
His position should have been more like, I admire his enthusiasm, but he just doesn't have the experience for a role like this. So something
right.
like that. But
yeah.
Again, it just went to the defensiveness that seemed to pervade the entire debate.
I agree with you. I found that McKee, Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee, and folks, we're talking about the race for Lieutenant Governor. I found him, Justin, it was like Regenberg was completely in control of the debate. He is, boy, he's got his points down. He is ice. He is very confident, very in command. And McKee seemed to just be in constant reaction mode. It sounds that they've never, to me, and I haven't, that's the first time I've seen the two of them together, but I don't, to me, feel that McKee ever found the right way to go back after him, other than he seemed to then harp on the element of, you know, the whole single-payer health care would double the state budget, we can't afford that. He's been involved with this stuff, but he's never been manager of something. I was surprised because Dan McKee always seemingly was pretty polished and seemed to have his act together, but he almost kind of seemed all over the place, and he was always reacting to something as opposed to being in command. And that was not one of his finer moments. If that's any sign of how the campaign is going, it sounds like they never fully came up with a strategy of how to fight off Aaron Regenberg.
Right, and when you're being sales pitch is that you're going to be better manager, the older statesman, to look like that, to be going to the moderators, the referees, and saying, hey, that was more than one word that he spoke there.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you're in control. So for example, he had a great argument, a great story to tell when they were talking about education policy, to say, look, whether or not you agree with my particular approach with mayoral academies, this is Mayor McKee, I've been doing this for 10, 15 years. So maybe the reason Mr. Regenberg hasn't heard of my activities is because he was still in middle school at
right.
the time.
I like that.
That's a way to kind of make the same point and be the elder statesman and be able to say things like, you know, I admire his enthusiasm, but he just doesn't know what he's doing. But he didn't do that.
No.
He's throwing his pen on the table. And it did seem they must have some kind of information that makes them scared in his campaign. And that's what I've been saying. The endorsements he's been racking up with mayors and such, and, you know, congressmen, senators, I don't know how much that helps him to get people to go out and vote, especially in a race that people really do think is somewhat inconsequential. And McKee did try to push that it does happen that lieutenant governors become governor. That does happen. Yeah, but, you know, am I going to worry about that so much with this race that where everybody kind of the last time lieutenant governor was a big race was whether one of the candidates was going to eliminate the office.
So, right.
So I think voters may very well take a chance on Regenberg with this, especially if they're deciding in a governor's race, you know what, I'm going to stick with Raimondo, but to exercise my progressive muscles, I'll vote for Regenberg and get him in there. And that sort of might be some people's personal compromise.
I think that Regenberg television commercial where he's opening up the doors and I think that's been the best campaign commercial of the season. And even though a lot of it doesn't match up, and he's far more progressive than people realize, and what this race really comes down to, I mean, the American Federation of Teachers, the public school, the teachers' school unions, they would love to get rid of Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee because of his support for charter schools, mayoral academy, and Regenberg gladly take that money. But he is, I found him, as much as someone that, you know, a Democrat operative that I talked to said, oh, he's all talking points. Well, but he stayed on message, and he was in command of that debate. And as much as you want to say, you know, sometimes it's tough who won, who lost, he was definitely kind of tail wagging the dog as far as McKee. I also thought, Justin, notoriously, Senator Reid is the last one to come out with endorsements. And Lieutenant Governor Mattee, he did get all the mayors except for Allure that have rallied behind him, and they're all behind him and so forth. But I thought that was very striking that Senator Jack Reid issued an endorsement to the lieutenant governor in that race. Now, notice White House did not, Cicilline did not, but that was, for someone that has followed Senator Reid in the past, many Democrats would complain to me that he was so slow to issue endorsements, and sometimes it was like even inconsequential at that point. But for them to come out and endorse, when obviously they could say we're not going to take sides in a Democrat primary, I think that is very striking for the for Senator Reid.
Yeah, and one wild card I think here is there's definitely, I've been picking up for a year or so now, a hesitance in among the establishment Democrats to stick their heads out and draw fire from progressives.
Right.
And so that's going to be a big wild card in this race in particular. How much are those establishment Democrats out there, the Joe DiLorenzo types who are, they're conservative generally in their cultural sensibilities, but they just don't want to, they don't want to draw any of that attack, because the progressives can be vicious in many ways, both in print and going after your businesses, picketing your house and leaving trash on your lawn. I mean, they've done all this stuff in the past year. So there may be this a wave of people out there that those kinds of endorsements are really the signal, like, you are still out here, folks. You got to get to the polls, and this is a significant race. That's really the message that McKee is going to have to get out there somehow to get those people in the privacy of the voting booth to say, you know what, I'm still not that crazy.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that comes about. That's going to be the question, though, in the lieutenant governor's race.
The Reid and, you know, the Reid, that's far more of the old traditional Democrat. And for them to, you know, that could, again, if we're going to, I found that very dramatic that he was willing to come out and do an endorsement like that. And last night when they had the get out the vote, they did have, you know, it was Governor Raimondo, it was Mayor Alorza, Jim Langevin was there, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse was there. But I did not see Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee in that photo, and Alorza is not supporting him. He's supporting Aaron Ruggenberg, and I didn't see Senator Reid at the Democrat get out the vote. That, again, he's not up for re-election, so he necessarily doesn't have to be part of that. But I even sense there that there's a split within the Democrat Party on that. We're going to ask Justin to hold on just for one moment. And, folks, when we come back, we're going to ask him about the Republican primary race and what I would call the path to victories for the two camps, or three camps, excuse me, that were involved. But I want to remind you on this rainy Monday, that if you want to really treat yourself, folks, what a wonderful treat. I had such a delicious lunch on Friday afternoon at Tavolo Wine Bar and Tuscan Grill. Leonard and his staff have done such a tremendous job. 970 Douglas Pike, Route 7 in Smithfield is Tavolo. They serve fresh seafood, delicious steaks. Tavolo, call them at 349-4979, authentic Italian food. They have an extensive wine list. What are you doing for dinner tonight? Hey, Monday Night Football is on. Two games, not one, two Monday Night Football games. Gruden makes his debut. And at Tavolo on Monday night, 50% off a bottle of wine. Why not a little vino at Tavolo? And they have the best wine list in Rhode Island. And take advantage of their Monday through Friday three-course price fix lunch, just $14.95. I brought a friend of mine. I'm telling you, we cleaned the plates. It was so delicious. The tomato basil soup is delicious. I also had the special Bolognese ravioli, which was great. My friend had the baked cod. I've tried the fresh lobster ravioli. The chicken parm is delicious. The grilled swordfish is tremendous, 16 ounces. It's Tavolo. T-A-V-O-L-O. Take someone nice out for lunch. Or maybe on Wednesday, you're going to go vote in the primary? Go to Tavolo for lunch. 970 Douglas Pike, Route 7 in Smithfield. All desserts made fresh from scratch in-house. I devoured the tiramisu. My friend had the key lime pie at Tavolo.
And tonight, the price fix dinner is just $29.95. Tavolo Wine Bar in Tuscan Grill, T-A-V-O-L-O, 970 Douglas Pike, Route 7 in Smithfield. Say hi to Leonard, his wonderful staff. Remember, they also have a great banquet gatherings, or you can order online for takeout. Tavolo online at Tavolo Wine Bar in Tuscan Grill, TavoloWineBar.com. Online at TavoloWineBar.com. It's John DePietro. We're going to come right back. Political Monday with Justin Katz in just a moment.
You're not like anyone else, and neither is your company, which is why at Bank RI, our commercial banking doesn't treat you like anyone else. With signature commercial banking from Bank RI, you'll find a premier set of services, flexible lending options, and the kind of personalized attention that makes our commercial banking unlike, well, anyone else. Signature commercial banking only from Bank RI. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Well, folks, remember, K&R, they are just so tremendous. Karen and her family, what a wonderful job they do. With K&R Auto Salvage, call them today at 353-9200. Large facility, K&R Auto Salvage. Located 950 Smithfield Road in North Providence. Go with the leader. Go with the best. It's K&R Auto Salvage. Well, they'll pay the highest price for your junk car. You can rely on K&R, K&R Auto Salvage. Call them at 353-9200, 353-9200, K&R Auto Salvage. And again, remember, highest price for your junk car, most cash, and they offer 80% off retail prices. K&R has access to nationwide inventory, guaranteed quality. Call K&R Auto Salvage today, 353-9200, 353-9200, K&R located 950 Smithfield Road in North Providence, right off of Middle Spring Avenue. All right, folks, we're back on this Political Monday. Again, we're joined by Managing Editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, I decided not to do, by the way, predictions, simply because I was speaking with someone, and there was a time years and years ago that I did do that, and then people were interpreting it as I was affecting the outcome, or I was, like, trying to pick winners or encouraging certain things, so we're staying away from predictions. But before we get to the Republican primary, which does come into play with what I'm going to ask, but I believe and I adhered that one concern, just sticking again with the Democrat primary, Gina Raimondo and Matt Brown, one major concern the Raimondo people have are the number of unaffiliated voters that, again, people show up Wednesday, you're an unaffiliated voter, and they say, would you like a Republican ballot or a Democrat ballot to vote? That they are very concerned with, as I have deemed it, the ABG, anyone but Gina, somewhat, not a huge campaign, but definitely out there. There's billboards up. There are now radio ads running. There is definitely some people that are ready to vote against the governor. And I was even surprised at the number of people that I thought would be voting in the Republican primary. And they say instead they're going to vote in the Democrat primary to vote against Raimondo. You do have all those retirees and so forth. But I think it goes beyond that, that you have Brown, as much as he may not have enough progressives and Democrats to push him over the edge, I think an untold story here could be the amount of unaffiliated voters that instead may request a Democrat ballot. I think that could help Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee. But I did hear from one Republican camp, which I won't say which one, but they were concerned that a number of their supporters said, oh, don't worry, you have my support in the general, but I'm voting against Raimondo in the primary. I'd like to, what, and I haven't seen any, there's nothing about that in that Providence Journal report. No one else has raised it. I'm going to take ownership. I would say this is, our show is the only, my show is the only show that has really focused on that, because I think it does strike a chord with people out there. But I'm open. That's just my opinion. What do you think about the possibility of people that want to say, oh, I'm going to vote in the Democrat primary because I'm going to vote against Raimondo?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd point out that even as far back as spring, the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, for which I work, was offering this as a possibility for people. You know, please consider disaffiliating now so you have the option to vote in either primary.
Yes.
Because in some places, there's especially in local races, there's nothing, there's no reason to vote in a Republican primary except perhaps the governor's race. And so a lot of people feel like Alan Fung is so far, if they support Alan Fung and they feel like he's so far ahead that it doesn't matter, that's the only race they have any concern about at all. And whereas if you vote in a Democrat primary, you can, as you were, I think you're right about how that would go down. You can not only vote for Matt Brown in hopes of harming Gina Raimondo, but you can vote for Dan McKee because you don't want you want to keep out Regenberg and a far, far left from making more inroads. And I think that's a real possibility, and it has been promoted by the center.
Yes.
And so I think that there are going to be a good number of people doing that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's just talk path for victory of the three campaigns, starting with whether it be, I don't care, you can pick either one, but Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, for obviously he continues to be the front runner. He, 4 years ago, received 55% of the vote. Ken Block got 45% of the vote. There was not a third party. There is a third party this time in the form of Giovanni Ferrosi. 4 years ago, 32,000 people voted in the Republican primary. I'm curious your thought, if you think it will be that much. I think Patricia Morgan has closed the gap from where it had been. I think she has, in the past couple of weeks, taken some chances, finished strong. I think her press conferences at her campaign headquarters have been effective. She has rolled out some different ideas. Some people, I don't know if it got a lot of attention as much as some people think, but they do like the, quote, team building that they saw of saying, I'm going to bring in this one, I'm going to bring in that one. But how do you see path for victories for the three of them?
Well, at this point, obviously, there are only a couple days, so whatever cards they have, they've probably played, but for the primary anyway. I think Alan Fung was probably correct to assume that he had a big margin, and I think he was probably incorrect not to do more debating, because I think he could have handled that well enough and didn't have so much dirt that it would really, anything new would come out to trip him up. But I think he's still headed for a pretty comfortable victory. We'll see, though. I don't know that I agree with you on Patricia Morgan's finish. There's just something about the negative attacks in a primary.
Yes.
That I think a lot of her, especially because she's not the establishment candidate.
No.
We noted this in her debate with you, after her debate in your studio, that she was almost taking the position of the establishment candidate and attacking an insurgent. And it's backwards. So a lot of her supporters, or her potential supporters, were people who were going to say, well, why are you attacking an ally?
Right.
Like Alan
True.
Fung.
Good point.
And a lot of them also, I'm bringing in, here's my team. But it's not, I mean, it's an inspector general and somebody who's offered, and Ken Block, who's offered, you know, to help out previous administrations in the way she's suggesting, and John Robitaille. I mean, they're not necessarily, I guess the basic point is that they're people you'll recognize if you pay a lot of attention.
Exactly.
If you pay a lot of attention, you've already made up your mind.
Yes.
She's not bringing in, I'm struggling for some conservative nationwide figure who's from Rhode Island, but she's not bringing in, you know, an Arnold Schwarzenegger
type, or
somebody who's going to wake up new people to her possibilities.
So yeah.
The people that will recognize the value of Ken Block or Arlene Violet or John Robitaille are people who, They know what the score is with the different candidates. So
That's an excellent point. And if anything, you know, I speak with all different camps and different Republicans, and I've been seeing a lot of different people. If anything, a number of Republicans said because of the Arlene Violet situation, they won't vote for Morgan because Arlene, and I was unaware of this, but supported Hillary Clinton, and Arlene is very anti-Second Amendment. So they were less inclined to vote for Patricia Morgan because of Arlene Violet. John Robitaille doesn't even live in Rhode Island anymore. And Ken Block, again, he's always, you know, floating around and doing different things. So it was a novel type thing. I do, you know, Jennifer Duffy, though, when asked, Justin, in this morning's Providence Journal, says any impact or refusal of debate says won't have any impact, and says even, quote, rooted in strategic malpractice for Mundo, for Raimondo to do the debate, and then, you know, same thing with Funk. So I would tend to agree with you. But as far as path to victory, do you think low turnout increases the chances for Rep. Morgan to be successful?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I don't think it's quite as clear as in the Democrat primary that low turnout helps Matt Brown. I don't think there's that much of the difference between Fung and Morgan in their general base of support. I don't think Morgan's captured the base as fully as she might have otherwise done, which the low turnout would help.
Now, as far as Giovanni Ferosi, the third candidate, he's already floating out to the Journal that this may not be his time, but another time he may run. I don't know what he's going to pull, and we're never going to know what would have happened if somehow, Patricia Morgan somehow could have struck a deal, which does happen, where they convince someone to get out of the race, and much like the way Alorza did with Brett Smiley 4 years ago. But do you think, any thought, Justin, on Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, who, again, he has a huge advantage being the mayor of Cranston, Warwick right next door. Having those two cities being a Republican is a big, big boost, because if you're Rep. Morgan and you're trying to beat him, you really have to out-deliver in some of the other suburban Republican strongholds in order to, you know, upseat him. Maybe, possibly in Coventry, I don't know. But it's a big advantage being the mayor of either Cranston or Warwick when you're going for statewide office. But the one thing, any thoughts on with Fung, if a lot of, for instance, someone on Facebook Live put this morning, I'm going to vote for Brown, but I will vote for Fung in the general. So that is one of those people that maybe they were counting on that vote in the primary, but that's someone that wants to vote against Raimondo.
Yeah, well, I think that's a lot of what's going to happen. And there may be some reason for concern for Alan Fung that people who assume he's going to win this are not there if he wins the primary and goes to the general, are not there this week voting for him. I suspect the gap in his name recognition, the fact that he's run before and almost run, in comparison with Giovanni Ferocci, where he says he's running and he'll run again. Well, you know, if you don't perform respectably this time, you kind of lose the case. And, you know, Fung is in some sense the Republican governor who got away, like the fish that got away.
Yeah.
So there's more incentive. There's a feeling like it was so close, give him another shot. Whereas if Ferocci comes in with, you know, a handful of percentage, that it's going to add to the narrative where people just don't really know why he's doing this, cases.
And I also, I just know that many times people underestimate how difficult it is, excuse me, to get statewide name recognition. And I they think they're known, and, you know, they're on talk radio, or they're up on it. They think people watch Capital TV, which, again, some people do. But I always hear this every couple of years when people run, that what they think that they're well-known, and then when they are actually well-known, it's night and day. And when you want to try to do that, it becomes a hurdle. One final question two other quick things before I let you go. And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We speak with Justin Katz on this Political Monday. This is very striking, Justin. In 1998, 78,000 voters turned out for the Democrat primary, 8,000 for the Republican primary. 4 years ago, you had 128,000 more voters in the Democrat primary. Now, you did have the big mayoral race in Providence, as far as that's where you had Michael Solomon, you had Jorge Alorza, and then you would, you know, CNC was waiting in the wings. And so you did have a big turnout in Providence. It was during the presidential year. But when you think about that, from 78, 20 years later, 78 to basically, you know, 38, 30,000 more voters, right? 40,000 more voters. 40,000 more voters voting 4 years ago. And then 8,000 voted in the Republican primary. And then 4 years ago, 32,000 voted. So that's a huge uptick. Do you think it will be flat around the same, or do you think it'll even be a little bit less?
Well, it's a good question. My general sense, without a whole lot of explanation for why, is that it'll be a little bit less. There just doesn't seem to be quite the buzz about it. In large part, I think Cianci had a big factor in that. Just getting people aware that there was an election going on.
That's right.
This time, there's contention, and there are political stories that folks like us can talk about and analyze, but I'm just not sensing that people really are in that mode. And as much as the election of Donald Trump set the left in absolute insane fury for the past 2 years, the economy is doing pretty well.
And it is.
So for most people, things seem to be somewhat back to normal. Whereas at the tail end of 8 years of President Obama, I think people were starting to tire of that and feel a real need for something to change.
Yeah.
And that would motivate them to go out and vote in every race. So I'd be surprised. I don't think we'll go back, to the lower numbers you cited, but I don't think we'll quite hit the last election's numbers either.
Final question. Something to watch for the general is, so Channel 12 last week, I was in Washington, but they had the debate, and I saw on Twitter immediately someone tweeted out, I'm seeing one candidate and two people questioning. And it turned out that it was just Patricia Morgan. Krantz Mayor Alan Fung declined, and then on Channel 12 said it was their corporate decision. So who owns Channel 12? NextStart. Their corporate office sets the policy that you have to be at the threshold of 10% in order to participate in the debate, and Giovanni Ferrosi did not qualify under that. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens in the general with Trillo, because if Trillo is not at that 10%, and they're saying that that is corporate mandate, that he can scream up and down and they're afraid to debate him or whatever the hell Trillo wants to do. But they set the precedent with Giovanni Ferrosi that if Trillo was not at, and he was not in the last poll, if you're not at 10%, Channel 12 very easily could say, we are putting on a general election debate between the winner of the Republican primary, the Democrat, winner of the Democrat primary, and that's it. And so that, I haven't heard many people talk about that, but that's hanging out there a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I remember long ago, before I paid this much attention to this stuff, and Bob Healey was running for governor, I think, it had to be 20 years ago, and he was the elbow in the Providence Journal's photo of a debate. So he was there, but nobody was really paying that much attention. I don't know. I'd be surprised if Trillo's at all involved and visible. I'd be surprised if they don't find some way to include him in debates. But again, it does raise an interesting question, is where has he been? I mean, he made a lot of noise a month or so ago with, beaching his boat and that kind of thing, but he's been quiet since then. I don't know
he
if
he has. Yeah, the signs come down in Narragansett too in front of that house, but I just think that's going to be something to watch. He can squawk all he wants, and I'm sure he would, but if Channel 12 says, we did a poll, and you're coming in at 9%, they have a policy, and they were very clear about that at that debate, at both debates, that that he did not qualify. Giovanni Ferrosi did not qualify for that, so they did not include him. That's why Patricia Morgan was alone. So
yeah, I think it's if Trillo's not there, I think that's going to be a sign of something deeper problem in his campaign, that he hasn't been doing what he was planning to do. And if I think that more significant than not being in a debate will be the fact that he didn't clear the hurdle to get into debate.
Exactly.
I think it'll be a signal to people that he's not really going to be a factor, so you might as well make up your mind among the other two.
Sure.
So I think that's going to be a harder thing for him if he doesn't get on there. But we'll see what he does after Wednesday, if he's got some big roaring comeback campaign to to in the works right after Wednesday.
Folks, he's a managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent, and we'll talk to you again.
Great to be with you. I look forward to next week.
All right, folks, there it is. Justin Katz right here on the John DePietro Show. This portion of the show, by the way, is brought to you by our friends at K's. Stop in and see them, whether it's lunch, dinner, or a drink in the lounge. K's, 1013 Cass Ave in Woonsocket. You can call them at 762-9675, 762-9675 at K's. I also want to remind you, folks, now it is going to be a rainy couple of days. What happens when it rains? You get more accidents. If you ever find yourself in an accident, pick up the phone and call West Fountain Auto Body at 272-3340. 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body. Located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. It's West Fountain Auto Body. It's Kenny. It's Patricia. They're going to work for you, not the insurance company. From a small dent to a nearly totaled vehicle, you can depend on West Fountain Auto Body. Again, if you were in an accident, someone texting and driving, someone hydroplanes, people not paying attention, a drunk driver, whatever it is, if someone damaged your vehicle, call West Fountain Auto Body, and you have to call them first. 272-3340, 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body. Folks, it's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Well, folks, it's September. People are back to school. People are back to the routine. And our friend Sal at Metro PCS joins us. Good afternoon, Sal.
Here I am, JD. Good afternoon. Happy September. I feel like I haven't talked to you in a while.
I know. Well, I was on the road, and then we had the big debate. But right now, boy, Metro PCS is a great time for people to upgrade their cell phones.
That's right. A little new offer this month, and I'll send you this. This is late breaking, but there's a new offer right now. Right now, when you switch to Metro PCS, you're going to get three free awesome smartphones when you switch three lines to Metro PCS. This is not going to last forever. This is a limited time fall offer. You're going to get three lines free when you switch to Metro PCS with three lines of service on a huge network that covers 99% of the people in the United States. So hurry in, call me, contact me, three lines free when you switch to Metro PCS. Plus, when you grab a third line of service, you're going to have unlimited data, three lines for $80 period. It used to be two for $80, but now you can get three lines for $80 a month. So it's all about three this month. Three free phones from great brands like Samsung, LG, and Motorola. Three free phones when you switch, three lines for $80 a month. This is a great opportunity to make the switch to Metro PCS. The kids are back in school. Fantasy football is hot right now. Maybe you need a third line to keep
track of the scores.
This is a big time right now. NFL is back. The Patriots are winning. And this is a winning offer from Metro PCS. Three free phones from great brands like LG, Samsung, and Motorola. Three lines for $80 a month. Great opportunity to switch to Metro PCS.
And Sal, tell people about your four great locations.
Sure. Absolutely. Four easy locations. First location, 989 Manton Avenue in Providence, right outside of Fruit Hill Avenue, down the street from Rhode Island College, outside of the Stop and Shop. We have 1852 Smith Street in North Providence, right outside of Centerdale, right next to Salon d'Italia, or right on Route 44 in North Providence, outside of Centerdale. Then we have 1027 Cranston Street in Cranston, right across the street from the Cranston Senior Center. We're right next to Aldi and Rite Aid. We're on the Cranston side, 1027 Cranston Street. And then we have the location famous for the turkeys at 1503 Atwood Avenue in Johnston, with directly right next to Town Hall. You have Burger King on one side, we're on the opposite side, with a turkeys hangout, 1503 Atwood Avenue in Johnston. And you can always be reached by calling 332-5051, 332-5051. If you have questions regarding the promotions, if you have a problem with your phone, if you have Bluetooth issues, whatever it may be, reach out to them. More than happy to help. 332-5051.
All right, folks, there is our friend Sal with Metro PCS. Good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380. Let's go to your calls. Good afternoon. You're up on the John DePietro Show. Hello.
Hi, John. Hi, it's Chris Young.
Hi there, Chris. Go right ahead.
Hey, John, I'm simulcasting on Facebook. I have 5,000 friends on Facebook. And so I'm just talking about the campaign today. You know, we're running for Congress against Cicilline. And it's time for a change. People in the district really do not want Cicilline to represent the district anymore. He poorly represented the district with the loss of the Paw Sox Stadium, which is within his district. He had no meeting with the leadership to draw people together. And we're getting a lot of people signing in right now on Facebook watching the simulcast as well. So basically, Cicilline has really done nothing to bring in federal dollars into the state of Rhode Island. He hasn't passed any legislation that he's written himself in Congress. He's been in there for since 2010, so over 8 years. He hasn't passed any significant legislation that he has written. And the issues just go on and on with members, you know, people in the district. He hasn't stood against the toll that they want to put on the highway that will apply to everyone. You know, they're trying to push that through the courts under equal protection arguments. And he's really done nothing to save Social Security, which, you know, they're saying by 2034 that it'll only be 75% funded. In Rhode Island, our utility rates keep going up. He does nothing to stop that. He does nothing to help people in the state get more alternative forms of energy like solar or anything like that. In Providence, when he left Providence with a water system that's one of the worst water systems in the country.
That's right.
It has the highest lead content, one of the highest lead contents in the country, and he's done nothing to bring in federal dollars for the Scituate Reservoir to help subsidize that, to reduce Providence's overall liability, or to replace the lead pipes that are in the streets in Providence. And so he's really absolutely done nothing for the district, other than since 2009, the rate of opioid deaths has increased every single year that he's been in Congress.
Good point.
And only this year does he start mentioning it when, District 1, when Saki and all the other areas surrounding District 1 has the highest numbers of opioid deaths in the country. So these are the issues that the people of Rhode Island care about. Our website is wheretovote.com. That's wheretovote.com.
Hey, Chris, let me just jump in for a minute. Listen,
sure.
People that are listening, send a message on Wednesday. Even if it's in the form of a protest vote, I want to appeal those that are going to vote in the Democrat primary against Governor Raimondo and vote for Matt Brown. You also have an opportunity to send a message and vote for Chris Young against Congressman Cicilline. That is, if you're listening right now, no, I do not live in the first district. If I did, I would vote for Chris Young against Cicilline in the Democrat primary to send a message. He has become part of the swamp. He does nothing to help Rhode Island. He's brought no jobs back here. Why not at least give someone else a fighting chance to do the work of the people? So, Chris, you have our support.
Thanks, John. And anyone but Cicilline. If people want to,
I like that. ABC. Anyone but Cicilline.
Yeah, we've got that. Michael Jackson song. If you want to play that over the next day or so, it's ABC by Mike. You know, by
yes,
Michael Jackson.
Yes, I like that. All right,
play
ABC. I'll play that on the air. Thank you, Chris. ABC. Anyone but Cicilline. So we have ABG, and we also have ABC. Anyone but Cicilline. Folks, vote against Democrat David Cicilline in that Democrat primary on Wednesday.
He's John DePietro. With his talk show on your radio, he's John DePietro. Tune in your radio. Go get him, Johnny D.
All right, folks, it's John DePietro. Listen, stay dry on this Monday. We're back tomorrow. Tomorrow, primary eve. You don't want to miss it. Remember, John DePietro, weekdays 11 to 2, AM 1380. Plug that in, 99.9 FM. Also visit DePietro.com. Stay tuned. The John Dion Show is next. Leave it right here, AM 1380, 99.9 FM. And it's WNRI.
WNRI, Woonsocket.